Can you name the seven deadly sins? As laid out by 4th century Christian writers, they're greed, lust, sloth, anger, pride, gluttony, and envy. But after more than a millennium and a half, how much does the fear of these so-called sins still matter to your life? More than you might think, especially if you're a woman, according to Elise Lunan, author of the new book, On Our Best Behavior, The Seven Deadly Sins and the Price Women Pay to Be Good. Elise is a podcaster and executive who has co-written 12 books, five of which were New York Times bestsellers. She joins us now to share five of her key insights.
Hi, this is Elise Lunan, author of On Our Best Behavior, The Seven Deadly Sins and the Price Women Pay to Be Good. I'm a writer, editor, and podcast host. I've spent my career thinking about and primarily writing for women, working to understand how our psychology is informed by culture. Here's insight number one. Women are programmed for goodness, while men are programmed for power. These qualities are not who we inherently are, though, but who we are told to be. In short, they are roles we are expected to perform. Anthropologist Ashley Montague talks about this as first and second nature. First nature is who we biologically are, at our core. Second nature, according to Montague, is the way society informs this biology and how it shapes our beliefs about who we are. Our second nature is story, very powerful story that we whisper into each other's ears. In this way, culture becomes contagious and largely invisible. In fact, biology and culture are so conjoined in humans, it's impossible to tease them apart. Does nature drive culture or the reverse? In this way, goodness has become a prison for women, particularly because goodness in our society is mediated by an external judge. We are chased by feelings of not good enoughness. We do not allow emotions that we consider bad to emerge so we can diagnose, process, and use them. In the book, I argue that the punch card for goodness for women is so obvious, it's become invisible. It's the seven deadly sins: sloth, envy, pride, greed, gluttony, lust, anger. These are the voices in our heads, chiding us to do more, eat less, stay small and quiet. An instinct to deny these essential human qualities lives in all of us, regardless of whether we were raised, adjacent, or in any faith. These qualities are culture at this point, not religion. In fact, they are actually Bible fanfic. They weren't in the Bible. They emerged out of the Egyptian desert at the hand of a desert monk at the same time that the New Testament was canonized. Insight number two. Women are conditioned to subjugate our wants to other people's needs. The wanting of women must be given a voice. I interviewed therapist Lori Gottlieb, author of Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, many years ago, and she offered an insight that became critical to my book. She tells her clients to pay attention to their envy because it tells them what they want. For women, though, envy feels so bad when we want so desperately to be good that we miss its signal. When envy comes up in our bodies, our immediate instinct is to suppress and repress it rather than letting it emerge so that we can diagnose it and use it to understand what it's trying to tell us about what we really want. Undiagnosed envy often comes out sideways, too. We are conditioned to judge the object of our envy, whoever is making us feel uncomfortable. We say things like, "I just don't like her," or "Who does she think she is?" or "She only has that because of this reason or that." We find reasons to criticize and condemn her when we should understand that this woman in question is full of information that we need. She is pushing on a dream we have for ourselves, and it is our job to use that as a compass for what we want in our lives. Insight number three. Our fear of sloth, in other words, not doing enough for everyone in all spheres of life, is killing us. The pressure on women to be good at everything, to be good mothers for one, along with conscientious and caring colleagues and leaders, only seems to ratchet up. In the fallacious quest for work-life balance, we seem to be trying to equalize our lives by continuing to add more to each side, and on and on. This lives deep in our psychology, meaning that the unburdening can't happen solely through systemic changes, but will also require deep personal work to do less. In fact, I argue that we must do less so we can be more to ourselves. I believe our busyness is also ratcheting up because it's one of the primary numbing mechanisms to keep all of our bad feelings at bay. Rather than allowing our anger to come up, for example, so that we can work through it, we distract ourselves with endless to-do lists rather than address our rage. Insight number 4. Telling women that we must bridge an achievement gap or quote-unquote be more confident is a moral crime. Women don't lack confidence. The women I know are exceptionally confident. We just know to lead with competence instead. We know better than to show our confidence. In fact, we spend a lot of time and energy cushioning our confidence to make ourselves more palatable, more likable. All of the social science supports the fact that men and women alike are hard on women who think they're all that. Look no further than what we do to women who dare to be seen. Look what we do to our most visible women of all, famous ones. They all seem to follow the same trajectory. We applaud them on the way up, and then when they hit a tipping point, we celebrate as they're shot out of the sky. This happens to celebrities, musicians, business leaders, and athletes. It also happens to a lot of visible female founders. It's a playbook for women we deem prideful. Normal civilian women can try to believe that what we've done to these highly visible ones has nothing to do with the rest of us. But this pattern recognition is buried deep in our consciousness. We know attention is dangerous. We have to start vocally interrupting this pattern to change it, and we must change it for all the women coming behind us. Insight number 5. Originally, the 7 deadly sins were 8 thoughts, and the 8th was sadness. I argue that a fear and avoidance of sadness has lodged in the minds of men, with terrible implications for us all. The primary symptom of this severing from emotion is toxic masculinity. It's represented by a fear of death, a fear of the cycles of life, and a fear of the loss of power. It's countered strongly by a desire to control the planet, control people, and dictate a growth curve that's up and to the right. We are a culture drenched in unresolved grief. Women must let their wanting come up, but men must let this sadness come up. Therapist Terry Real, who primarily works with couples and men, explains that while overt depression is more likely to be diagnosed in women, when you add up rates of overt depression, personality disorders, and addiction in men, the rates equalize. Men are far more likely to take their own lives. Men are more likely to suffer deaths of despair. We often talk about patriarchy and its effects on women and marginalized people. And yes, those are its primary targets. But patriarchy is also killing men. These wounded boys become wounding men. These are the agents who are wreaking havoc on all of us. Bringing men in contact with their sadness might offer relief to everyone as we look to rebalance society and move toward a more balanced and equitable future.
thank you, Elise. That was Elise Lunin with five big ideas from On Our Best Behavior, The Seven Deadly Sins, and The Price Women Pay to Be Good. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.